It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news. Stats and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
People aren't just waiting on LeBron to mess up so they can harp on him. That's not it at all. He's just being compared to higher standards. Greatness.
Kevin Rayfuse.
James Dolan is a travesty. You are in New York City, in the biggest city in the United States. There is no reason why your franchise should not have won a title in the last 40, 50 going on year.
And Justin Cousart.
You gotta get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stephenson.
Let's go.
So the intro of this show last week, it was something. And we're really going to have to struggle to live up to that one this week.
Well, hold on. Let me interrupt you just by saying that someone left us a review on iTunes, always appreciated. And his review said how pro we were and everything. And then we read that review right after opening up with 10 minutes of Wiener talk.
Just absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, so we're going to do this again this week. Well, hopefully.
Not really. I feel like this is a little bit more mature.
Yeah, it's not going to be Wiener talk, hopefully, as Tim so eloquently puts it. But rather, Tim is here because we know that Tim is just has quite the dating experiences, as you know if you're listening to this podcast by now. So Tim's here with dating tips.
I mean, that's true, but I should just say also that we have brought in a special guest for the intro to have a woman's perspective on this as well. Annalise Delgado, you hear her in our Drive and Dougal intro.
Hey, guys, and yep. Ladies.
So Annalise is here, and these are
two ladies. How many women do you think listen to this podcast? I'm actually genuinely curious.
One, the one know. That left us a review
hey,
that one time.
It only oh, takes right. one.
So these are the top five dating tips for men and women. I guess I'll go from number five to number one. So the fifth on the list is leave on a high note. Keep things short and sweet. Better to leave other people wanting more.
Does that mean like a pat on the butt or something? Is that the high note?
I've always felt like a first date should last a max of 2 hours. Like, you don't want your first date to be a 3 or 4 hour adventure. Yeah. You kind of want it to be a little bit short and sweet.
Yeah.
A cup of coffee, an hour, hour and a half conversation.
Well, you don't want to, like, tell everything right away, you know? Because then the second date, it's just not as fun. Like, what do you have to talk about if I told you everything already?
Right. And then you guys don't have that chemistry built up so you can really talk about things going on in your life. No one right. wants to hear about your work schedule.
Right.
Okay. Number four, be honest about yourself. Starting a relationship based on a lie is never a good idea.
I mean, yeah. I feel like that goes without saying.
I mean, but when you have, what if you have skeletons? Like, what if you have a kid, right? I don't have a kid. But if you do, are you telling that person that you have a kid right off the bat?
On the first date? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Every woman that I've ever gone out on a date with that had a kid, they let you know on the first date. And that's probably after experiencing not telling guys and then going on three or four. Yeah. Then they find out and don't see him again.
Yeah, you don't want a surprise.
The like, old, that I could, have a
you know, could be a deal breaker for some people.
Deal breaker. All right, what's the next one?
Well, going off of what you just said, the third one is actually don't bring baggage. Avoid talking about past relationships.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then also, you can never come off sounding sane as a woman because everyone thinks women are crazy anyway.
Women are crazy.
Oh, well, Tim.
Nope, there go our female listeners.
But you can never come off sounding sane talking about the problems with your ex.
Well, it just makes it look like you're stuck in the past.
And petty.
You can't have a new relationship if you haven't moved on from your last one.
That's true. No one wants to hear about the ex.
Yeah.
All right, number two on the list is and maybe Annalise has some feelings on this, don't research before a first date. You can Google them later.
Okay, I do have feelings on this, especially if you're online dating. As a woman, you have to protect yourself, right? There are rapers, murderers, and just straight creepers out there, especially online dating where you don't have a chance to really look into them beforehand. So I'm going to Google them. I'm going to pull up my county jail records on them. If I took journalism, like I was in journalism school, I'm going to use those tricks that I learned to make sure that I'm safe. And also, if he doesn't have any skeletons that I can find in the closet. I'm not trying to go out with you if you've been arrested multiple times on assault.
But wouldn't just meeting in a very public place avoid all of that?
But does it matter? Like, maybe he will not assault me, but it doesn't, I don't want to spend my time with someone who has been locked up for 10 years.
Hey, where's your sense of adventure?
Oh, yeah. I have adventure. It's usually in the form of watching adventure Netflix shows.
Netflix and chill.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's valid. Well, I like to research them, so I don't listen to this because I like to have something to talk about. If I can look them up on Facebook and I can see the fact that they like to go dancing on Saturday nights at the Loft.
So then you can like trick them into making it seem like it was an accident?
No, or if I can find out they went to whatever college or they're into something, you can do a little bit of research. So I don't necessarily agree with this, but there's probably some validity to it. Number one, be open-minded.
If you go in prejudgmental, it's going to be doomed to fail from the start because you're going to always be let down, I feel like.
You have to realize that no one's perfect. And so if you go into the situation not looking for perfection but with an open mind, you're not going to be disappointed as much as if you had high standards.
Or not necessarily looking for somebody that is what you imagine yourself being with.
Exactly.
And I think that plagued me for years.
Can we talk about the fact, this is a side note here, can we talk about the fact that there's a baby boom in Buffalo right now? 9 months after they got 7 feet of snow in November, the hospital said they deliver about 60 babies per month, and right now they're delivering like 150 per month.
It's hilarious.
Like, that's
they're actually
so funny.
They're blaming it on a snowstorm.
Well, I mean, if there's 7 feet of snow, what else do you do? Seriously, you're stuck in the house. You can't even get out of your house. You are stuck in your house if there's 7 feet of snow.
I wonder how many relationships that saved. Like, these couples probably hadn't boned in a couple of months. You know, they've been married for years.
It's like free couples therapy, I feel like.
It makes me wonder, like, for hurricanes, like here in Florida, if that's a thing, too. You know, like, hurricane season's coming up. No, I don't need a hurricane.
I feel like if a hurricane's coming, I'm going to just run away. I don't know.
Or we could come hide in where we work, but no one cares about that.
Well, yeah, that's going to really happen.
And that would be really awkward, you know? Not only was this baby conceived because of a hurricane.
But conceived at work?
Journalistic integrity right there.
But enough dating talk. This is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rafews. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
My mid-range, three-point consistency and upper body strength. I want players to pay for going under the screens at times.
What happened to Ball Don't Lie?
I wanted to introduce it with Justin's intro. I feel like we still need to incorporate the random NBA player tweet.
Well, so who was it?
Austin Rivers.
Oh, God.
After saying that he felt like he should have been there instead of some of those players in the USA minicamp, someone was asking him what he thought he should improve on the most. Apparently, he thinks he should improve on his mid-range game the most.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, I guess, but I said this on Twitter this week. I love Austin Rivers' confidence, and I respect it, and I absolutely think it's great that he's trying to win Most Improved Player this year. Like, good for him. But there's no single player who played in that scrimmage game who Austin Rivers should be there over.
A lot of people, if they had to pick somebody that might be better, they're talking about Michael Carter-Williams.
Right, but even if Michael Carter-Williams have taken off, just... Michael Carter-Williams can't shoot, which I think we figured out by now, but I think his defense alone, and if he can get that offense going and facilitate, and he can post up on smaller point guards, then he's just better than Austin Rivers is.
So I was wondering, because I was thinking, well, maybe I could think of one player that Austin Rivers was better than. I thought about Elfrid Payton, but then I thought, no, Elfrid Payton's just much better than Austin Rivers.
He's got a higher ceiling.
Right, and he was just better last year. And then another podcast brought this up, actually, when they were talking about Austin Rivers and Michael Carter-Williams, was that Michael Carter-Williams was the rookie of the year. Austin Rivers was arguably one of the worst rookies of all time. So you can't say that. But I thought to myself, okay, well, let me compare their stats. So I looked up the per 36 numbers of Austin Rivers and the per 36 numbers of Michael Carter-Williams. And I guess I should say that I'm not a huge fan of per 36 numbers because I feel like if somebody's only playing 10 minutes a game, their per 36 numbers can look incredible because they're only asked to give that amount of energy for 10 minutes as opposed to somebody who's averaging 32 minutes a game. So I don't think the per 36s are the end-all, be-all stat. However, in a case like this, it is important, in my opinion, and really the only comparison note you have. So let's talk about Michael Carter Williams right here, because I thought about the shooting, and maybe Michael Carter Williams is a worse shooter than Austin Rivers. But the per 36 numbers for Michael Carter Williams are 40% from the field, 7 assists, averaging 16 points with 2 steals a game. Per 36 numbers for Austin Rivers, 39% from the field, while averaging 4 assists and 12 points.
I mean, what else do you got to say? The proof's in the numbers right there.
Yeah, so it's not just eye test. Michael Carter Williams is actually a better basketball player. Austin Rivers is no better than any player on the USA summer minicamp.
Nope. But he should. I mean, like I said, I respect the confidence. I think you should strive to get better and hone your craft, and there's nothing wrong with wanting greatness, but he's got a long, long way to go. Well, we got a review this week, and we've, like I said last week, we've been getting a bunch of reviews lately, and we really appreciate this. Again, you know, this is not to stroke our ego. It actually helps us move up in the iTunes ranks, so your reviews are much appreciated, and we're going to be reading them all throughout the few weeks. So if we don't get to your review this week, hang on. We've been getting a few, and we promise we will get to it. But this review is in the U.S. It comes from Alex Guerrero Allstate. And it just says sweetness. It's a 5-star review, and it says fantastic NBA content.
Short but sweet.
Right. Getting right to the point.
Yeah.
Love it.
No, I like it. We were going to read a review from another country. I think we had one from the UK we were looking at. We had one from Australia we were looking at.
Canada, too.
But without Justin here, there's just certain things we can't do. And one of those things is apparently pulling up iTunes reviews.
Yeah, it's weird. The way it... You can look at it on a desktop and you can go to a country, but it only pulls up, like, unless you have iTunes downloaded. Unfortunately, the computer we have doesn't have iTunes downloaded, so it only lets you look at the first 3 reviews in each country.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're just not the first 3 reviews in the country.
Right. So we didn't forget about you. We will get to yours, but thank you so much. Also, if you have a chance, we know it's summer and a lot of NBA podcasts aren't going on right now. Trust me, I know. I listen to all of them myself. Tell a friend about the podcast. They want to get some NBA news. They need to binge out on an NBA podcast during the summer. Please, by all means, tell a friend about the pod.
Absolutely. But why don't we get into some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
The Raptors are finalizing a deal with Jonas Valanciunas. It's expected to be a 4-year deal worth $60 million. Tayshaun Prince has signed a 1-year deal with the Timberwolves, where he's expected to play a mentor role. Terrell Wright has signed in China with the Chongqing Dragons. Wright last played for the Trailblazers and could return to the league in March once the Chinese season ends. Speaking of China, former number 1 overall pick Greg Oden has signed a 1-year, $1.2 million deal to play for the Jiangsu Dragons. The Milwaukee Bucks have signed free agent forward Marcus Landry. Landry last played in Spain, taking part in 49 games. The Sacramento Kings have agreed to hire Roland Beach to run their new analytics department. Beach was previously with the Dallas Mavericks and is also the founder of 82games.com. And last but not least, the NBA has released its full schedule. It's available for viewing right now at NBA.com.
Something.
So the NBA schedule officially released. It is out. Tim, the first day this was released, I walk into work and I stepped into the studio for a second to go on air, and I came back out and Tim had a printed Phoenix Suns schedule for me, complete with key games highlighted, sitting right on my desk. And Tim is holding another version of it right now, ready to go.
Yeah, you know what, too, is I want to point out that highlighted list of notable Suns matchups ended up in your very important pile of paper area on your desk at work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by very important, this is a pile of paper in which you turn around and make notes on and then stick in the recycling bin.
No, I write notes on the back of it. No. I know what I'm writing on, though.
I would also like to point out that my Phoenix Suns play your Philadelphia 76ers on January 26th.
Can't wait. Hopefully it's not like the last game. Last time we played you guys, the first game of the year, it got a little chippy. That's after Bledsoe said that Kentucky would beat the Sixers, and Nerlens Noel promptly on the first drive just smacked him across the face.
And then the second game, if I remember correctly, was a really uninteresting blowout.
Well, no, the first one, that game, I think was a blowout. The second one, I think, was a little bit closer. I mean, I don't recall. It was a very specific game. And
the thing about basketball is that if it's not a competitive game, if it's a blowout in any sort of fashion, the games, to me at least, aren't remotely fun.
No, they're just boring. I mean, it's cool, I guess, you get to see the end of the bench, but you already know the outcome.
So for you, what were some notable matchups, some key games coming up this season? And also, thank you to the NBA for releasing this in August when there's nothing else going on except for the USA basketball thing that they were doing, which to me was a lot more like an all-star game with a whole lot of offense and zero defense.
Yeah, no, one game that I'm really excited about, it's not the opener, but it's the night after. It's October 28th. The Spurs play the Thunder. And so you got LaMarcus Aldridge making his debut with San Antonio. You've got Kevin Durant, first game back, coming off foot surgery. You know, we know these teams have battled before, twice in the Western Conference Finals. And so there's a lot of different things going on there. I'm excited to see the Thunder play. I think people forget how good the Thunder have been and how good Kevin Durant is.
Yeah, there's Kevin Durant's been in the media a lot, too, and I think a lot of people don't realize how much this coming year is going to be the year of Kevin Durant, arguably the biggest NBA player for as long as I can remember hitting free agency. The only bigger NBA player to hit free agency is LeBron James. And all year long, there's going to be those questions. Is Kevin Durant leaving? There's obviously the return. Kevin Durant spoke recently to the media saying that he actually had a controversial non-FDA-approved piece of synthetic bone put into his foot for his foot fracture.
Yeah, this is a lot scarier of an injury than people realize. And unfortunately, last year, it seems like he got rushed back on it. And that only made it worse. I mean, I remember he played a handful of games, but then re-aggravated it and missed the rest of the season. So it's going to be interesting in that regard. And we'll get into this once we get into previews in about a month a lot more extensively, but this is probably the biggest season in Thunder history, in my opinion.
Well, you know what I was thinking about, too, is Kevin Durant is 27, and I didn't realize Kevin Durant is 27. No one's giving him a hard time for not winning a ring. And you just mentioned how this is the most important year for the Thunder, and it's the most important year for the Thunder for a lot of reasons. Notably, Kevin Durant is about to hit free agency. This could be the year that they either win a title or they don't. But I'm wondering if they don't win a title this year because the Western Conference is crazy competitive, and Kevin Durant ends up with a Chris Paul-type legacy. At what point do we start faulting could even make the argument, the best player right now in basketball for not being able to win a championship?
Well, I think the last few years, it's been because when they went to the finals in 2011, excuse me, against the Heat, and I don't think anybody really expected them to win. I thought they competed well through the first three games, but nobody really expected them to win because they were all so young. But it was essentially predetermined that the Thunder were going to be right back in it. I mean, I remember Dwayne Wade saying in the handshake line to Russell Westbrook, you know, we'll see you guys next year. And then Harden got traded, and then Westbrook got hurt 1 year, and then Durant got hurt 1 year.
And then Ibaka got hurt.
There's been so many injuries with this team that it's hard to tell because we haven't really seen them at full strength, I feel like, in a while. But at the same time, and the other thing that people are forgetting, too, is Scott Brooks is gone. This is Billy Donovan's first year.
Yeah, rookie head coach.
And we just saw Steve Kerr win a title in his first year, so you never know, maybe. Right. Well, I'm saying best case scenario is Billy Donovan comes in and has that kind of an effect. It's possible. You said Billy Donovan's coached a lot of NBA talent. He won back-to-back championships at the University of Florida. So he's got a winning pedigree. But it's a lot on a rookie head coach. The Warriors, there was no real pressure for them to win a finals this year.
Well, everybody was locked up. You don't have this impending free agency of the arguably the best basketball player in the world.
Right. And so you have that battle now, and it's going to be interesting, you know. And I know Westbrook is going to do everything he can to keep Durant in town as well. And I don't think it's as predetermined that Durant is going to leave as everybody says it is. But if it goes really south this year, it'll be a lot more interesting and intriguing because KD is in the prime of his career right now, and you want to win when you're in your prime. You
know? Well, especially from a legacy standpoint.
And he'll start hearing that talk. You know, I don't think he'll ever hear it quite as. Put it this way, I don't think anybody's going to hear it the way LeBron heard it from probably between 2010 and then. No, but Melo never got it like LeBron did, dude. LeBron, people forget, when LeBron lost that finals to the Mavs and the Heat, there were people questioning would he ever win a championship, even though he was only how old? Because people also have higher standards for LeBron than they do for everyone else. Everyone has anointed LeBron the chosen one since he was 14 years old, and he's lived up to that legacy, in my opinion. But he always had that, you know, he was held to the Jordan-esque standard, the way Kobe was. It's not like, I don't think Durant and Melo are quite held to that.
Did you read Paul Pierce's article in the Players Tribune about the hardest players to guard?
Yeah, I did.
correct me if I'm wrong, but Durant wasn't in that, right?
No.
No. Were you surprised that Paul Pierce said Carmelo Anthony is the hardest guard in the league? Because that's not the first time I've heard that.
See, here's the thing, though, and it's not the first time I've heard that at all. Kobe talks about all the time how difficult it is to guard Carmelo. And Carmelo offensively is an incredibly gifted player. I mean, the guy's 6'10", but can knock the jump shot down from all over the floor. We know how good Carmelo Anthony is offensively. That's never been his weakness.
Well, I mean, even defensively, I think at this point he's being a little bit underestimated. It's like the James Harden thing.
Right.
Where you've improved. But I think that the knock on Carmelo is, unlike other greats in the game, he's not making the people around him better.
Well, a little bit of the... Well, that's definitely there, and that's definitely true. His assist rate's never been the best. But I think the other technicality is, and this is maybe looking into it, more into it than Pierce's, but I don't think Paul Pierce's matched up against KD the way he has Melo. And Paul Pierce is, up until now, has been in the Eastern Conference his entire career. So, Melo's been in New York for how long? They had multiple playoff battles. You know, he had that back and forth with LeBron. And I think he mentioned AI and T-Mac. You know, these are all Eastern Conference guys. And they mentioned Kobe, obviously, because they had the two finals against each other. But, you know, I think a lot of that's Eastern Conference oriented too. So I think he just may not have guarded KD as much as he guarded some of the other guys.
Yeah. Anyway, we strayed off topic right there. Sorry about that, everybody. And again, you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafews, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart. Justin, by the way, isn't here. But let's go ahead and bring it back to some other notable games. One for me that really stuck out was the Heat at the Cavaliers. Not because of the rivalry so much with the Heat losing LeBron, but just it seems like the Heat this year, with the way that they're built, they have a lot to prove, and I think that they could potentially be the 2 seed in the East. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup, because if, and this is all barring everybody being healthy, but if everybody's healthy, the Heat do have something to prove against playing the Cavs, but not because of LeBron, but just because of they need to prove we are a championship contender, and that's October 30th.
Right, and by the Heat proving that, it kind of does get them out of LeBron's shadow, though, a little bit. Because the fact of the matter is, since LeBron's left, you know, last year they kind of got robbed by injuries a bit. But like you said, the Heat have quietly built themselves back up. You know, Goran Dragic is still there. I really like them drafting Justice Winslow. You assume...
I know you do.
You know, you got to understand that Dwayne Wade is going to miss games at this point. I think everyone knows that. Everyone expects that. But Chris Bosh coming back into that lineup, he was playing really well until he got the blood clots last year. I think people once again forget how good Chris Bosh is.
Yeah, and especially now that he can stroke it with a three-point shot, too. And one of the things about the Heat, and we talked about this a little bit before, is there's some questions going into it. And we talked about this on the show, I think more so last year when we were doing our previews. How many ifs, right? So with the Heat, you're looking at, was last year a fluke with Hassan Whiteside? Or is this year, can he keep that momentum going? Can Chris Bosh be healthy? Can Dwayne Wade be healthy? They picked up Amari Stoudemire and they picked up Joe Green. Does Amari Stoudemire have anything left in the tank, even if it's just coming off the bench? Can Gerald Green be effective?
Right.
So there's a lot of questions with this team, but I feel like if everything does work out, and that's a lot of ifs, that they could be absolutely dangerous in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think they're probably the dark horse of the conference right now. I think at worst, they're a 5 or a 6, mm-hmm. but I don't even think...
And that's assuming health.
Right. But I think 5 is realistically where I'd have them. You know, I haven't quite laid my rankings out yet, but I think 5 is around where I'd have them right now.
All right. Well, any other games stick out to you?
Yeah, the other games that stick out to me right away, because we're not going to get into every single one of these games, but there's a doubleheader on November 11th that's pretty intriguing. You have the Clippers at Dallas. Now, it's not the first DeAndre Jordan game. They play at the end of October, but it's the first one in Dallas. And you know Dallas is just going to be a zoo that night.
40 straight minutes of DeAndre Jordan free throws. Normally, that would bother me, but I can't wait.
I'm never going to be more entertained by DeAndre Jordan shooting free throws. And the other one that night is probably the later game, is the Spurs at the Trailblazers. That's LaMarcus Aldridge's first game back in Portland.
See, everyone's saying that, but I don't know. I don't feel like LaMarcus Aldridge leaving Portland, like there was any animosity. I think a lot of Portland fans, and if we have any listening right now, if you're a Portland fan, you're listening, correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like they understood.
Yeah, and I think they did too. I'm not expecting it to be like Dallas when DeAndre Jordan gets there. I'm expecting a bit of a mixed reaction. I mean, you're going to get people that are just going to boo no matter what. But, you know, he was there for 9 years. It's never like he was really BSing why he was there. It's not like he ever had issues with the fans or anything like that. I just think it stands out probably because LaMarcus Aldridge was the biggest free agent this year. Or that left, I should say. I mean, Marc Gasol was obviously too, but he's staying in Memphis.
Right, the chain of teams. No, I feel you. I agree with you. So a couple of other notable ones that I want to mention is, so I went on SB Nation and I got a list. They did a breakdown, which is really convenient. Cliff notes of each team and how many national TV games they have, how many back-to-backs. But most notably, they did a game to circle segment. And I wanted to bring up the Phoenix Suns, which I'm going to talk about, and then the Philadelphia 76ers, since those are the teams we're experts in. And the Phoenix Suns, the game that SB Nation said to circle was November 27th versus the Warriors because, quote, it was around this time last year that the Suns defeated Golden State. Will it happen again? That's not the game to circle for Phoenix Suns
fans. I was going to say, that's kind of a random game, I feel like.
Yeah. that's not, no. So anybody that happens to be reading it, being a Phoenix Suns fan myself, the first game that's the first really notable game that I am excited to see for the Suns is November 22nd at New Orleans. And that's because the Suns are going to be battling with the Pelicans for that seventh or eighth seed, along with the Jazz too. But the Pelicans have the better player. And it's really important for the Suns right there to mark that they are a better team than the Pelicans.
Okay, I agree with that. Suns, Pelicans, and Jazz for me are going to be the three teams fighting it out for that 7 and 8 seed in the Western Conference.
Mavericks, arguably. So let's go ahead and talk about the Philadelphia 70 circles, the Philadelphia 76ers. The game to circle, they said, was March 26th at the Trailblazers. Both teams should be terrible. It's late in the year. You do the math.
I mean,
what game did you circle? Is that the one that you're like, oh, I can't wait till the 76ers? Are they saying right there that that's going to be the competitive game of the year?
No, I think they think it's going to be a tank fest because both teams are going to be terrible at that point. I think Portland is, none of us project Portland to be that good this year. And the Sixers are going to be better than they were last year, but I still don't think the Sixers are going to be great.
No, Portland, they're tanking, but while they're tanking, they were able to pick up a couple of really young key pieces at the same time. They picked up Miles Plumlee. They picked up Alperic Aminu.
Well, Noah Vonleh, I think, was a good pick.
Noah Vonleh as well.
Giving the chance to develop is a really good.
Basically, they tanked, but as soon as they tanked, they essentially got 4 draft picks right there, but with players that have already put more than a year in. Like, it was kind of genius the way that they did it.
Right. The game I have circled is actually pretty early in the schedule. It's November 4th. It's at Milwaukee against the Bucks. And the reason I have that circled is because the Bucks and the Sixers are just two of those rebuilding teams. They've kind of gone through the rebuild at the same time together. You want to see the young talent match up against the young talent. And obviously the Michael Carter-Williams effect is always going to be there. You know, that's one of the more controversial trades in recent, you know, Philadelphia sports history. So there's always going to be that kind of draw. You know, no one has any ill will in Philly towards MCW, but there's always going to be that draw every time those two play each other, especially since the Sixers point guard situation is awful. I mean, there's no other way around it. Our starting point guard at the beginning of the season, if Roten can't play, is going to be Isaiah Cannon, who just inspires zero confidence in me.
Whatever happened with Norris Cole?
We never picked him up.
That didn't.
I just don't really think Norris Cole is that good, honestly. I think all his numbers have fallen off since the first 2 years with the Heat.
I mean, I agree with you, but I had heard that there were rumors that they were trying to pick up Norris Cole.
Well,
it
seems like the Ish Smith train has sailed, too. You know, that was going to be the question if they bring it back. I mean, if you look at the point guards today, you have Cannon, who I think makes the roster by default, even though I don't think he's the point guard going forward. You have Roten, who is going to make the team, but Roten's still coming off that ACL tear, so there's just not a guarantee they'll be ready right away at the start of the season. And then you have Pierre Jackson and Scotty Wilbekin. And Wilbekin's arguably a better two. And Jackson's never played an NBA game.
Did you hear those comments that Jimmy Butler considers himself a point guard?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think he can run the point. Like, I see what he's saying, but he's not point guard.
Right. I felt like that was strange. I got the broader point he was trying to make, but it was, especially with Derrick Rose, it was a weird comment.
Well, him and Derrick Rose just always kind of have a weird relationship, it seems.
Jimmy Butler spoke about that too, saying that was all media hyped, media driven, that they were looking for a beef there that wasn't there.
That's always what they say.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. Obviously,
unless you're Markieff Morris and then you just blatantly say, no, I want the hell out of here.
Yeah, obviously, I'm not in the Chicago locker room, so Jimmy Butler is probably right, but it's just always, there's always odd things surrounding those two. I'll put it that way.
So let's switch gears just a little bit and let's talk about the national TV schedule. who's on TV, who's not. I guess we'll start at the top. So the two teams that got the most, and this is not surprising at all, is the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Golden State Warriors with 25 games apiece.
Yeah, zero surprises.
OKC and the Clippers, 24 games apiece. I was a little bit surprised about the Clippers.
I am and I'm not. Blake Griffin's a household name, regardless of whether he's in that elite, you know, best player in the league talk is a whole different category, but Blake Griffin is a household name.
The New York Knicks had their national TV game schedule. I think it was cut from, what was it last year's, 15? Down to 7, regardless, though, as they are on TV significantly less than they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, they were terrible last year. I think they're going to be better this year, and I think that, you know, it just speaks to the state of New York, and the fact of the matter is just Melo isn't drawing national attention right now because no one thinks the Knicks are going to be in the mix this year. And I said this on Twitter this week as well, that I like the direction the Knicks are moving in. I really do. But it's just they're at the start of it. So there's not, you know, Porzingis has got a long way to go before he starts to develop. I think they signed a lot of savvy veteran players. I like Robin Lopez signing. I like the Aaron Aflalo signing. But they're just not, they're just kind of in that limbo stage right now.
They aren't
compelling.
It
doesn't really draw, right, it doesn't draw national attention.
A little bit surprised that the Pelicans are getting 13 national games, and I guess I'm not because of Anthony Davis, but if you look at the fact that the Pelicans are on TV on Christmas against the Heat, but they're on TV on Christmas regardless, I'm pretty sure MLK Day as well, but I could be wrong about that. I don't have the schedule in front of me. It seems like the league is investing exposure into Anthony Davis.
And they have to. I mean, Anthony Davis is going to be the next great. We've talked about this a billion times. I feel like it's almost like we say this every show at this point. But the league needs to get ahead of the wave. People want to start seeing Anthony Davis as he continues to develop. He's a special player. And regardless of how interesting the Pelicans may or may not be, Anthony Davis is worth the price of admission every single time.
I agree with you. You'll love this, Kevin. The Lakers are on TV 19 times, and just to put that in perspective, that is more than the Suns, the Jazz, and the Wizards combined.
I can't say I'm surprised about the latter part, whether I agree with it or not, because I think all three of those teams are much better teams than the Lakers are. I ranted about it last week. But you kind of sold me on the Kobe farewell tour a little bit.
Hey, I've never changed your mind about anything before.
So,
that's the first time.
That's not true.
No, that is the first time I have ever changed your mind about any opinion you've ever had.
That's
win
not true.
For Tim. Win for Tim.
That's not true at all. But I kind of agree. If it's Kobe Bryant's last year, I'm okay with it. And that's the only reason why I'm okay with it.
That was also the only reason why I'm okay with it. Kobe Bryant recently made some comments that he wants to end his career. He's going to end it with the Lakers, and then he wants to play for the 2016 USA Olympic team. And I guess I'm wondering to you, he said that he wants to earn the spot. He doesn't want it to be given to him. But Zach Harper actually brought this up. What's wrong with there being a lifetime achievement award, especially for somebody like Kobe?
Just like a spot on the team. Kobe's been on multiple gold medal teams. Like, is he the best option for the team at this point? Probably not. And I understand the desire to compete for country, but Kobe's earned that respect. And if that's the way, you know, he's one of the greatest basketball players of all time. I think if that's how he wants to go out, I think there are probably 11 players who would give up their spot for him to have that spot on that team.
Well, it also seems really fitting because he's going to end his career not winning another championship. Like, we can probably all agree on that at this point.
Right.
Why not end it with a gold medal?
Well, and Kobe's an international guy. People forget that. You know, Kobe's fluent in Spanish. He was a military child. He was raised all over the world.
He's gigantic in China.
Right. Yeah, he wants to play in China. There were talks about that he said he may go over and play in China or play in Brazil or some of these other international leagues if he just wants to keep it going. And I can see that. How hilarious would it be to watch Kobe just barking at Chinese basketball players? It would be so hilarious.
They're very short.
Right. And Kobe would just, he'd be able to shoot 100 times a game if he wanted to. And he's got a good 4 inches on Shaq.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason why his foot gave out.
Man, oh man.
So bring it back to the schedule really quick before we move on, because we have to check in with Griffin Conley, our blog editor, about a fantastic piece he just wrote on the Pacers. The Denver Nuggets, the Pistons, and the Sixers, zero national TV games. One of our listeners actually mentioned, and maybe you can quote him a little bit better than I can, but he doesn't understand, one of our listeners from Australia, he doesn't understand why every team isn't on TV at least once. And I kind of agree with that. Especially if the Lakers are on 19 times.
Well, the NFL does that, where every team gets on at least one time on national. And I would be okay with it. Like, as a Sixers fan, I'm not really that upset about it. I'm more upset about the fact that Malik Rose won't be calling our games anymore, or our color guy.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, I'm really, really upset about that. Got a front office job with the Hawks, but guy was just such a good color commentator. He had such good chemistry with Mark Zumoff, and it's gonna be a shame. You know, you wish the best of luck for him, but you know, it's gonna be pretty disappointing not hearing him on Sixers games anymore. But I mean, it's all about ratings, unfortunately. That's just the path that the NBA takes. They go for the
ratings.
Well,
that's why you put like the Bulls on against the Sixers or one of those. I like when the Suns are on TV, they're going to be playing the Clippers.
Right.
You know, you aren't going to see a Suns Orlando game
on
TV.
Right. That's the point that I made, is you wonder how many of these teams wouldn't have any national games if, say, they weren't playing the Cavs, or they weren't playing the Warriors, or they weren't playing the Thunder, or one of these teams that gets a lot of attention and national draw. But it would be nice to see one team on every day. I mean, the teams that are left off, I mean, the Sixers, it's just, though the Sixers have the stigma that's surrounded with everything. So I'm not surprised that it's the Sixers. The Nuggets just, I mean, to put it bluntly, the Nuggets are probably the least interesting team in basketball. We don't know what the Nuggets are doing at all. There's no real superstar player on the Nuggets. It's just kind of, I think the Nuggets are by far the team I've watched the least of in the last 2 years. And I don't think it's close.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. I just have zero interest in watching the Nuggets play basketball. Zero.
The Pistons are a little surprising.
Maybe so I can watch Gallinari play, but that's even remote. The Pistons are a little bit surprising, especially with Andre Drummond. He's coming up a third or fourth year right now. He's expected to make that jump this year. I saw him play in the U.S. camp scrimmage, and he was fantastic. I mean, he was really, really good. I am a little bit surprised that they don't have at least one game because of that alone.
You know, Brandon Jennings is on that team, and they're intriguing pieces. They weren't a terrible team last year. They weren't very good, but they weren't the worst either. I thought maybe like when Greg Monroe came back, they might sneak on national one time, or maybe when Josh Smith comes back for the unintentional hilarity. Yeah, no, Detroit's way more surprising to me than Philly or Denver. I would say Sacramento, but, you know, they have DeMarcus Cousins, so.
Yeah, no, he's a star.
He's a draw every time. But you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzart, who's not here right now. You can follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. And we're joined on the line now by Griffin Conley, the DriveInDishPodcast.com blog editor. Griffin, how are you doing today, man?
Doing all right, man. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. You know, just out here on a Saturday. Struggling a little bit this morning. I'm pulling a Justin, but it's all right. We're going to power through it.
All right.
But, you know, they're both slacking today. Tim is out prepping for a real job, and Justin is in Los Angeles, which I think up until this point on the episode, we haven't told our listeners yet. So that's going to be a fun little tidbit for them to find out here.
Okay. I'm going to be in Orange County next week.
Oh, all right.
Maybe I'll run into Justin.
I was going to say, I think he's out there for a wedding, so, or maybe I'm totally wrong here. But anyway, so you wrote this blog, and it's a really great blog. First off, we appreciate the love, even though you don't agree with us. You know, all three of us appreciate the love at the beginning of the blog. But for everyone who hasn't read this yet, it's about the Pacers. And we got a mailbag question a few weeks ago from Charlie Burns, and we had seven locks in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And, you know, the obvious ones, Cleveland and Miami and Chicago and Atlanta and Toronto and Washington, all these guys. But Tim, Justin, and I think the Pacers are a lock to make the playoffs. Griffin does not think the Pacers are a lock to make the playoffs. And so I guess why don't we get into it, since that's what the blog is focused on, why the Pacers aren't a lock to make the playoffs. So you mentioned three big things that's going to determine whether to make the playoffs. And the first one is, will Paul George return to his former self after that just gruesome injuries? It was almost 2 years ago now with the broken leg. So I guess, what do you think we can expect out of PG this year?
I mean, when you look at his stats, you watch his play from before the injury, I mean, he was a really good player, but he was still sort of an up-and-comer. And I think what happens is when people go through these horrible injuries, we tend to you know, talk about, you know, we tend to lament the injuries themselves, and we think about how great the player was and what could have been and stuff like that. And I think what sort of gets lost is the reality of how good of a player he is. And I mean, listen, Paul George is he's a top 15 player, or he was a top 15 player. He made, I think, the third team All NBA. But after his hot start, he really sort of petered off. And I mean, he still had a way to go. I mean, there are some nights where he was one of the best players in the league, but then there are other nights where he not necessarily disappeared, but just wasn't as big of a factor. So I'm not expecting him to come back and be this, you know, huge savior. He's definitely a good player. But I don't expect him to just come back and carry the Pacers to, you know, a sixth seed in the East or something like that. I mean, who knows? Maybe it could happen. But if we're just going off the past, I don't think he's that kind of player quite yet. But, I mean, we'll see. You know, he's 2 years older.
You're not at all optimistic about him getting a few games in to end last season?
Yeah, I think that was probably good to get a little run in. He did, what did he, strain his calf or something like that? He hurt one of his, I think the other leg that wasn't the one that was broken.
Right.
But, yeah, it was definitely good to get some run in, just get some NBA action and get that, you know, the butterflies out of the stomach kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
When players come back from injury, I mean, even when I start playing basketball after I've had a bum shoulder for a while, when I start playing basketball, you know, I'm a little wary about it, thinking about my movements and stuff like that. So it's probably good to get those jitters out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other big thing in Indy this year was Roy Hibbert is gone. And we kind of saw the writing on the wall with this last year that Larry Bird and Frank Vogel said they want to switch to more of a small ball offense. And I guess, what do you expect out of the Pacers this year when it comes to making that transition? Do you think they have the personnel right now to do that effectively?
They're still a little bit thin on the wing. Tim and I sort of disagree on the merits of Solomon Hill. I mean, he's a fine, I guess, okay backup player who can play 8 minutes a game. But if they're going to play small ball, that probably requires C.J. Miles and Chase Budinger getting a lot of minutes small forward. So that's a little suspect to me, that spot right there. I'm really hoping that Frank Vogel, that Paul George does buy into the whole small ball thing, because if he doesn't play four, I just don't see how that five-man rotation of Jan Mahinmi, Jordan Hill, Miles Turner, Rakeem Christmas, and who am I missing? There's one more guy. Lavoy Allen. I just don't see how a five-man front court rotation like that's going to get you over the hump. So Paul George definitely needs to join that mix, and it sounds like he will. I think Larry Bird's been pretty adamant about the fact that coaching and management makes the decisions in terms of, you know, who gets out on the court, not Paul George. So I'm optimistic about that. But Paul George definitely needs to join that front court mix in order for the Pacers to have a successful year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think him at stretch forward work well. But you mentioned Jordan Hill. Tim wanted me to ask this specifically. What did you think about Jordan Hill's arrest?
You know, I didn't hear much about it. What was it? He was speeding in Atlanta?
Yeah, he was speeding, and the cop, he was going 110, and when the cop pulled him over and kind of Jordan Hill was like, you know, are you really going to arrest me right now, yada, 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 and the cop was just like, you're driving like an idiot. Yes, I'm going to arrest you.
I mean, okay, maybe for like Kobe or something like that, but Jordan Hill, like, you can't say, hey, man, I'm Jordan Hill. Like, you can't arrest Jordan Hill.
Yeah,
I don't think you can pull the Jordan Hill card. I don't think that even exists.
No, I don't think the common police officer knows who Jordan Hill is.
Right, right. I don't know who Jordan Hill thinks he is. But, I mean, that's funny. That's something that's driving 110 miles an hour. Have you ever driven 110?
Yeah, there was one time. It was actually back in high school. My friend had it turned out to be a panic attack, and I'm not going to say his name, but we thought at the time he basically had every symptom that he was having a heart attack. And
oh my God.
And let me preface this by saying, when this happened, I was driving a 1996 Geo Prism. So when I got that car going 110, I think it was borderline going to fall apart, but I was also trying to get this kid to the hospital, so it was all, you know, bets off at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I was asking, geez, that's an incredible story. But that's something that's not even in the realm of possibility for me, because my parents have a Nissan Leaf, one of those electric cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't even, I'm maxing out at 80.
Dude, that's sweet, though, saving the environment a little bit. I can't wait till Tesla and all that gets more, or expands, I guess I should say, and that, all that technology becomes a lot more, you know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We're entering a new age,
yeah,
for sure.
A new age indeed. But the Pacers, they're entering a new age, and one of their new kids on the block this year is Miles Turner, and I'm actually really, really excited about Miles Turner. We saw him. I was really impressed by his game at Summer League when we went down a few weeks ago, and I just when they made this pick, it just seemed like such a perfect fit and an absolute steal for them, 11. So I understand that he's a rookie, but I'm pretty high on Miles Turner. The other big pickup for the Pacers this year was Monta Ellis. I guess, what can we expect from those two this year? Do you think they're going to make a positive impact right away?
Monta Ellis, I think, is going to have a good year, especially if the Pacers go small. The more the court is spread, the better Monta Ellis performs. It just depends on if the Pacers can cover, you know, some of those holes on defense, and I think they will. I think Monta Ellis is a good fit in Indiana. So I'm expecting good things out of him. Miles Turner, I mentioned this in the article. I don't pretend to be a college basketball expert or anything like that. So, I mean, he could very well be a great player. I have no idea, though. I don't pin much on rookies in terms of, making that much of a difference. But, I mean, who knows? He could be great. I know a lot of people think he's a pretty good outside shooter. He's a good outside shot. And he's a long, lanky dude, and he can protect the rim. That's sort of the read I get on him.
Yeah, if they he's definitely more mobile and can stretch the floor than Roy Hibbert, put it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I know a lot of people pointed to his running motion. They said his running style was weird. That doesn't really bother me that much. I guess the weirder you run, the more susceptible you are to injury. As someone who I think of as Greg Oden, he sort of had a funky running style.
Yeah.
Miles Turner, hopefully he turns out to be a great player. You know, I love having great players in the league. That'd be a huge boost for the Pacers. As solid of a defender as Yan Mi is, he provides, negative on the offensive end. So if they had someone in the front court who could contribute other than Paul George, LaVoy Allen's pretty good on offense, too. He's pretty serviceable. But, if Miles Turner can step up and get a lot of playing time early, that'd be great for the Pacers. That would definitely help cement them in the Eastern Conference.
Make sure you guys check this article out right now. It's at driveanddishpodcast.com. We're talking to Griffin Connolly, our blog editor. And Griffin, I got to get you out of here on one last question. I'm reading the article. When you go to Waffle House, so ironically, I went to Waffle House last night. I may or may not have had a few adult beverages before. But anyway, so when you get your hash browns, you get them smothered. That's all you do. Nothing else?
No, you got to get the onions in there. Something about it. You know, when I make hash browns in my house, got to put onions in there.
Yeah, I like to switch it up sometimes. I go for the jalapenos a lot of times. I really like the extra kick in my hash browns.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, it's a good call. There's one thing that is on the menu. Actually, it may not even be on the menu. You can order hash browns all the way. That's with everything on top of it, and it's a meal in and of itself.
Yeah, I think I saw that. There's like a small little picture for it. It's like $5, but man, they put like chili on it and onions on it and all sorts of peppers. Yeah, it would be. That's a lot of hash browns.
It's a good time. It's obesity on a plate, but it's worth it.
It's Waffle House. There are not many. We don't have a lot of Waffle Houses in Pennsylvania, and by not a lot, we have two in the entire state. So that's been one of the perks about moving to the South.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Boston for 9 months out of the year, and they don't have Waffle House, and it's a goddamn shame.
It is a shame, absolutely. But Griffin, we're going to get you out of here. Thank you for joining us, man, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, sounds good.
So again, that was Griffin Connolly right there. You can check out his blog on our website, driveanddishpodcast.com. Fantastic read right there. Again, you only heard Kevin in that interview right there because Justin is gone, and well, he's our producer. Without him, we're a little bit lost. So let's bring him back a little bit right now. Something we wanted to talk about. We aren't going to have time to get into the Tristan Thompson standoff, which I find absolutely hilarious, but we felt like it was a little bit more important to talk about the Bucks getting a new arena, and you might wonder why, except we aren't going to talk about the fact that they're getting a new arena. It's how they're financing that new arena.
So Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has decided to fund this arena using taxpayer dollars. Now, the reason I have a problem with this is because
first off, the Bucks owners are billionaires. And the people of Wisconsin and Milwaukee are paying all this money to something that's going to make billionaires richer.
Well, I think the concept behind
the games.
Right. Well, the concept behind it is that you improve business downtown, right?
Right. But John Oliver had a really great piece on this where pretty much every study done ever shows that there's a minimal boost and that it never even remotely makes up the gap.
So we're talking $250 million out of the $500 million. Essentially, the taxpayers are floating half of the bill for the new arena. The Bucks Arena is 20 years old right now.
Right.
But it has no glaring weaknesses.
Right. Like, they need it. There's no doubt that they need a new arena, but it should not be coming from the taxpayers. Because more importantly, and this is going to be a little more political here, but the state of Wisconsin cut $200 million from their education budget this year.
They have a $2.2 billion budget deficit.
Right. So you're telling me that you're cutting money from schools to improve society and kids who are learning and making us better in the future by being more educated to fund a Milwaukee Bucks arena?
Well, especially one that doesn't, they don't need a new arena. And if you look at the Packers, for example, the Packers arena is 57 years old compared to the Bucks at 20 years old.
Right.
And if the money, they've equated it out to where, and I was reading an interesting article on Forbes about this, but that $250 million with interest is actually going to be a little bit closer to $400 million.
So it's just, I don't see how you can justify cutting that much money from schools and then paying for a billionaire's new arena so they can make more money.
Right.
I just have a problem. I have a moral problem with that. And that's nothing, and it's nothing against the Bucks fans. The Bucks deserve to be in Milwaukee. They should be there. They've historically been there.
Well, that's a point I wanted to bring up too about this, is that the Bucks signed a contract where they will not move to Vegas. They will not move to Seattle for the next at least 20 years because of this funded arena. That was part of it.
But how fucked is that in principle, that you basically blackmailed a fan base into paying $250 million to pad your pockets by threatening to take away their team, which has been there for over 50 years in Milwaukee, who's won championships in Milwaukee? You basically held Bucks fans up at gunpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just presenting the other side of the argument.
Oh, I understand. It's just I have a serious moral problem with this at this point.
And just to put a little bit of comparison on there, the Warriors are switching arenas. The Warriors just won a championship. They have a much better core, and their new arena is being 100% funded by the team itself,
right?
By the owners itself.
Good for the Warriors owners. That's awesome. Like, good for them.
So you're going to vote for Scott Walker?
No.
No.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everybody.
Oh, boy.
You don't have to wait for us to post up our post on Facebook on Thursday asking for mailbag questions. You can send us a message anytime you want on Facebook, on Twitter, at Drive and Dish NBA Podcast, and hit us up with your mailbag questions. So we got a bunch on Facebook this week. The first one is by Charlie Burns. He says, who will meet Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals?
My underdog pick, and I want to see this happen, is Washington, because I hope that Otto Porter continues to play the way he did. I hope they finally fire Whitman and get a real coach. I hope that John Wall and Bradley Beal continue to take the leap, because I just think that would be entertaining. Chicago will be in the mix. I think Atlanta will be in the mix again. I'm kind of betting on Atlanta, I think, if is the easy bet here. If I had to, you know, if somebody put a gun in my head and said pick one, I'd probably say Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Miami. I think if Miami is healthy, that they have the starting lineup to compete with anybody in the East. I do believe that between their draft pick and Gerald Green and Amari Stoudemire, that they have improved their bench. So I'm gonna go with Miami on that one.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely the dark horse. I think we talked about that a bit earlier. I would not be surprised if Miami's in the mix. Toronto's going to be in the mix too. I'm not quite as high on them as I am on some of those other teams, but they're, you know, I don't want to not mention them either.
Dave Massey also hit us up on Facebook. He said, what are our favorite all-time championship teams and why? Also, out of your choices, which team would prevail over the others?
Oh, boy. I mean, I guess, I wasn't alive for it, but if I'm being a homer and picking the Sixers team, the Sixers in 67 were widely regarded, and up until the 96 Bulls were the highest, or had the best winning total in any NBA season. So, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, fun team to watch. They ran down the gauntlet from start to finish, but I wasn't alive for that. So, unfortunately, I haven't seen the Sixers win a title in my lifetime. So, I guess, in terms of the most fun to watch, that Heat series against the Spurs in 2013 was great. The Boston Lakers series in 2010 was great. The Pistons teams in the 2000s were fun. But, I mean, that was a little more slow. The game is a lot different back then. But I guess those are my, I mean, they're not, I wouldn't say they're really my favorites, but I guess they were the most fun to watch. So I guess that counts as my favorite.
So Sean Hayes hit us up on the Facebook again for mailbag, and he always gives us the best questions. And he said, "Hey guys, it's your Los Angeles guy here. Nice response to the city bus question last week." You're welcome, Sean. "My max was a 12-year gap. Describe your first kiss and all its awkwardness. To break the ice, the first time Sean himself kissed a girl was as a freshman in college. She lured him into her apartment with pizza rolls at 3 a.m. pepperoni pizza rolls, which are the best in his opinion. We were in the same apartment complex and very drunk coming back from a party. Knew her from class at school and ended up having my first sexy time that night with no monies involved too. Hashtag pizza rolls, hashtag sexy times, hashtag monies, hashtag mailbag." Sean, why was your first kiss in college? That's weird, right?
I mean, yeah, mine was earlier. My first kiss was after, we had this dance called Winter Ball and in high school, and it was basically the freshman and sophomore equivalent of prom, because you couldn't go to prom unless you were invited by a junior or senior.
Right, it's same for us.
And so after freshman year, I kissed my date, this girl, Emily.
Yeah, mine was when I was in the seventh grade, and I had a girlfriend at the time. I was living in Georgia, a suburb outside of Atlanta, and it was, looking back on it, I didn't realize it then, super hick, super country. I had no idea. My seventh grade girlfriend at the time chewed tobacco. She was in the seventh grade.
Wow.
And so
wait, did she tell me she had a lip in when you kissed her?
I'm sure she did. She always had one in. And she was my first kiss. I don't remember it really all that well. We were sitting down, and I remember kissing her. But looking back on it, that was not my greatest feat as far as my trophy wall of women that I have been with.
Well, look at it this way, man. You can only improve from the first one.
So
I'm not saying I improved from my first one. Like, that's not a shot at Emily, but, right. You know.
She hit me up on Facebook probably 10 years later, and I got a chance to see what she looked like, you know, after she was all grown up and an adult and everything. And she, you know, a couple of kids living in Georgia, not awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the, I just can't imagine, like, I was going to visit my cousin in Charleston in South Carolina, and there's two ways to get there. You can either drive up 95 through Georgia into South Carolina, and then either get on 26, or you can get off at this other road. It's called the Charleston Highway. It's a 60-mile road, but it goes right into the city. It's faster than 26. And I'm telling you, I'm driving on this road, and there's just nothing around. There's one house, like, every 10 minutes. It's like swampland. There's just, obviously, there's no shopping centers. And I'm just like, what do people do around here? Just what do you do all day?
Make babies.
I don't think there's enough babies that you could make to entertain you for that long.
So thank you everybody so much for hitting us up with those mailbag questions. They are greatly appreciated. Just a real quick shout out. I wanted to say LeBron James, you are the man. His I Promise program for the kids of Akron, Ohio. He is paying out 1,100 college scholarships to the University of Akron. The first scholarships that are going to be available aren't until like 2021, I don't believe. But LeBron James is paying for 1,200 people to go to college, those Akron scholarships. And it's through his through his foundation. So it's through him, but essentially it's through the LeBron James Family Foundation. Each scholarship is going to cost him about $38,000. And honorable mention to LeBron James. I think that is one of the most charitable and amazing things I've ever seen an athlete do.
Yeah, he's basically putting $40 million of his own money up to send people to college, which is just absolutely incredible. And LeBron, we know, didn't go to college, but he said that he takes the education process so seriously. And just giving back to the community. I mean, LeBron James is the living embodiment of Northeast Ohio. I mean, it really is bigger than sports for LeBron to that region. And we also, I think we got one more, or we got a question on Twitter, a quick one that we want to mention. I think William Taylor asked us this question. With LeBron and Michael Jordan have been kind of jawing at each other about who'd beat each other in a one-on-one game. LeBron said they need like barbed wire and chairs. It'd be like a cage match, basically, is what he called it. And Jordan said there's no doubt he would beat LeBron James. And I actually have to agree with Jordan here, even though
I think LeBron would beat him. I think his size would be too much for Jordan. And I think he just posts up and just beat him.
And that's my thought, too. But Jordan's a better jump shooter than LeBron is. I feel like Jordan could. And I feel like Jordan's trash talk is just going to be absolutely absurd the whole time.
Jump shooting, absolutely better. I completely agree, but I still feel like posting up Jordan, that's a much higher percentage shot, and that would just prevail.
Yeah, and it's,
I think LeBron could play better defense on Jordan than Jordan could on LeBron.
Yeah, I think Jordan's got a better handle than LeBron a bit too, though. I mean, I think LeBron has the potential to be better than Jordan all time, but I think that's, LeBron's reasoning for that, if he passed him, would also just be other parts of his game that wouldn't show up in a one-on-one game. Like his passing, for example. He's one of the best passers ever.
Yeah, he's a point forward. He's like Magic Johnson.
Absolutely.
I've always thought LeBron James is much more like Magic Johnson than Michael Jordan. I've never really quite understood the comparison.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. LeBron looks to pass first. He facilitates his teammates. He can take over when need be, but LeBron James just finds people in places that you can't defend against. So thank you, everyone, for listening to this edition of the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. We really appreciate it. Justin is in Los Angeles. I guess we haven't really said that this entire show, but he's out there right now. So he will be returning. In the meantime, thank you. And again, we'll have 3, 2, 1. And just hit that blue subscribe button on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM. And a special shout out to Player FM actually for making us a featured basketball podcast. We really appreciate that, being up there with some of our idols in the basketball podcasting game.
Absolutely. And if you're an Android user, we aren't just on Player FM, but we're on Stitcher, we're on Podbeam, basically any Android app for podcasts apart from Spotify. Again, still working on it. We're available there. Please leave us a review on any of those. And if you do, by all means, send us a message on Twitter. We're at Drive and Dish NBA. Let us know, and we'll make sure to read your review on one of those as well, not just the iTunes.
And if you're so inclined, you can follow us individually on Twitter. Myself, Kevin, I'm at Refuse to Lose. Tim is at Radio Tim NBA. Justin is at Justin C on the air. So, yeah, hit us up.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Here's your dog.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da.
Hey! Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.
10 And luck.
I'm going
to
make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.